This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm your host, Arum Galadima. Let's start the show.
This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm excited to bring you today's guest,
Kema Ufele-Smith, who is a business lawyer and founder of Capital Field Attorneys in Nigeria. It's a firm he founded after serving as the money laundering reporting officer for one of Nigeria's leading official banks. He's had a wide range of experiences, so I'm actually going to let him take it off. So, Kema, I gave a very brief introduction, but I'd like if you can let the bandits get to know you a little bit better.
Okay, my name is Kema Ufele-Smith. I am the founding partner of Capital Field Attorneys, a firm I founded in 2012. I've worked not just in my own law firm, I've worked in the banking sector. I wanted to get the requisite experience from the sector itself, and I was the assistant head of legal covering certain southern states in the country.
Wow.
And then I went on to become the money laundering reporting officer of the bank, of one of Nigeria's leading commercial banks. After that, I went on with my law firm, Capital Field Attorney.
Great. And one thing I'm drawing out is that you said you wanted to get experience. So did you always know that you wanted to start your own business?
Oh, yes. That has been the ultimate goal. But when I started off, there were so many concerns as to my age, as to my exposure, as to how much experience and knowledge I actually had. Because in the law profession, people don't just care about your passion. They want to know how much experience you have.
Yeah.
They want to know how much of their businesses you know before they can entrust you with the task of advising their businesses. They will always want to know how much experience you had. So I knew I was going to start my own, but then I knew I also had to get the required knowledge and experience from the sector itself.
You talked about being a little bit younger. Do you mind sharing your age with us?
Currently, I'm 30 years old now.
Okay, so still pretty young for that industry. How do you navigate that, because I'm sure that you're definitely one of the youngest doing the work you're doing. So how does that ever come into play? Do people sort of look at you and say, I don't know if this guy's old enough?
Definitely. Oh, yes, it happens. We've played the underdog so many times. But really, that's what it is. You just find yourself playing the underdog. Mm. And typically, you know how the psychology of the underdog works. The underdog would always want to prove a point. He would always want to say that he's as capable, he's as competent, and he can do just as much as the older heads in the business can do. So it always comes up. You always have, especially with older clients, older institutional clients, and older persons who have been in their industries for so many years. They have these fears when it comes to giving a young lawyer a brief, because they feel somehow you just don't have the required experience or patience. Even if they think you do, they just would feel more comfortable giving it to the older head. And with my industry, it's a bit more challenging, because typically you're considered a smart lawyer when you have patches of gray hairs on your head. So it could be tricky, but over the years, what I've insisted on doing was to over-deliver on my promises. So our work always speak for themselves. And whenever we're in a negotiation, whenever we are in a briefing, whenever we are consulted to do any work, we always do twice as much. So, people able probably see that we are offering more than the older institutional clients, the older competition would give them. So we always try to over deliver to make sure we stay in business, basically.
Okay. Yeah, that's really good. You often hear people saying that you under promise and over deliver. So I think that's a really good nugget for the bandits to be drawn out. But even before we go a little bit further, let's hear a little bit more about you, where you're from, where were you born, just so the bandits get a better idea of who they're listening to.
Okay, I'm a Nigerian. Mm. I was born in Edo State, Nigeria, but I'm not from Edo State, Nigeria. I'm from Anambra State, in Nigeria. But my mom was living in Edo State at the time, so I was born in Edo State. I had my primary school education in Edo State, had my secondary school education in Edo State. Mm. Now, Edo State is in the south, it's in the middle belt region of the country. Southern middle belt of the country.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had my formative years down there.
Okay.
And then I moved to Abuja for my university education. Abuja is the seat of power in the country. It's in the northern part of the country.
Yeah.
And then I did that there. But currently I work in the southwestern part of the country, Lagos.
Okay.
So I've had calls to go around the country, you know, from the middle belt to the north, and then to the southwestern part of the country.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
And so we also want to know, what fires you up in the morning? What is your morning routine, and why is that routine important to you?
What fires me up every morning is knowing that that's a fresh day, that it's an opportunity to get something meaningful done. And it just makes me fired up. It just makes me wonder what I could possibly do that day that could be the defining moment of my life up until that point. You know, because I mean, I believe it always takes a day. In one day, you do something that probably, I mean, Thomas Edison had one particular day when that invention clicked. You know, that it just always happens in one day. So I always see each day as an opportunity to rewrite history, as an opportunity to do something meaningful. So it always just, I just wake up fired because of the endless possibilities of whatever could be done that day. I know every successful person has, or I've heard every successful person has a morning routine.
Mm.
But unfortunately, I don't have any morning routine. I try to stay fresh. I try to be unpredictable to my own self.
Mm.
You know, and in that way, I think my creativity stays awake and stays fresh. So I wake up today. I could start by meditating. The next day, I could start by working. Today, I started by working on an advice on a legal opinion. So it just is different every day. Every day is different for me. I could wake up and do some exercise. The next day I could wake up and place a phone call. I could wake up and dance. It's just different every day.
Yeah.
And that's particularly because I want to stay creative and I want to stay fresh.
That's interesting. You know, I don't think in the interviews that I've done, I don't think I've gotten that answer before, but that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
And also a big part of being an entrepreneur is being able to sustain yourself. So can you share some ways that you bring in income for yourself?
Well, I have just one thing I do. Mm. Which is providing legal advisory services to people. But then I try to offer it in different ways, you know, because you always have to be in touch with the time and you have to stay innovative. So, even if it's just one package, I try to compartmentalize it in different packages. So, you know, I offer retainer services such that I tell, people who are doing small business owners or medium-sized business owners that we would be your legal advisors for the entire year. You know, you just don't need, we're like insurance covers to you, so you don't need to worry about anyone attacking you that whole year. You don't need to worry about your documents you're drafting because we'll go through every document that leaves your office and every correspondence that comes in. You know, we just give you that cover that no matter what happens this year, we have your back. So just don't worry throughout this year, and then for that we attach a price to it.
Okay.
So that's the service we offer to small businesses, small and medium sized businesses. And then there's also the one-off, one-off cases that come to you where someone has an agreement to draft, someone needs a legal opinion on something, someone has a problem with law enforcement agents, you know, those ones that come up by the day from people who just walk up to you and ask you for your legal services. So we also do that. But then for the sake of having, yearly projections such that you don't just depend on, how many walking customers or how many, referrals you get.
Mm-hmm.
We try to make sure we have projections by estimating the number of retainers we should have in a year. You know, okay. So if I can have up to say 30 small businesses in my books, where I protect all 30 small businesses, year round, and you know, there's an amount, the minimum at which it should pay. So I just have that estimate and know, okay, so this is the exact amount I'm expecting every year from small and medium-sized businesses.
Mm.
And this is aside from people who just call you randomly because they had trouble or they want to do business with someone and they need advice and they need, you know, draftings and all of that. So, that's really how we get profit from our legal service.
Interesting. And so, I guess, how old is Capital Fields? When did you start it, and how long did it take for you to become fully sufficient off of that business?
We started in 2012.
Hmm.
So that's about 7 years, the 7 year old baby right now.
Wow. So you're 23 when you started.
Yes.
Wow.
No. How old was I then? I was 24.
Wow.
Yeah. It was started November 2012.
Okay.
So by November this year, it will be 7 on the dot, but the 7th year in operation. You know?
Wow.
So, yes, we weren't fully profitable not until 3 years down the line.
Mm.
Because for the first few years, I had to take up lots of free cases because people just wouldn't trust you with their cases.
Mm.
Even to draft a very simple agreement, people will be skeptical to trust you with it just because you've not been tested. I wasn't tested at the time. No matter how much passion I showed them I had, no matter how much confidence people ahead of me had in me, the clients just didn't have that in me. So I had to do so many free cases. I went to the prisons, went to handle cases for prison inmates for free. I released because they were not choosers. The prison inmates, the indigent prison inmates, just as long as they saw someone willing to do it for free for them, they just jumped on it. So I did lots of those, and I was able to release a good number of them, and that really boosted my profile because those were success rates.
Yeah,
you know, so I was recording successes, but then these successes were all coming out from my pocket. The expenses, I had to pay for all of that.
Yeah,
but then I had to do this consistently for people to see that I was on a winning trajectory, you know. So I kept winning and winning and winning, and people just associated me with winning, you know. And then little by little, they started trusting me with their cases here and there. So yes, for the first 3 years, I just kept on investing and investing. My name had to go out there because we don't advertise.
Yeah.
So my work had to sell itself. I had to sell myself. I had to hope that people invite me for speaking engagements. You know, whenever you have a case in court, you go and you speak passionately, so people meet you in court and say, "Hey, I like the way you talk. Can you do my case? Can you handle my case for me?"
Yeah.
You know, we tried a lot of things, but looking back, I think those things worked out.
Yeah. And so you said for 3 years you probably weren't making money. So what were you doing to survive at that time?
What I was doing was I had this, I had a role model. He was like a mentor role model. He provided some form of safe haven for me. So I worked for him while I did my own business. But what that meant was that he didn't pay me as much. It was more like a stipend.
Mm.
And at least I could use that to put body and soul together when cases just weren't coming. I think there were times when in 3 months I would make just about $30.
Wow.
You know, in those beginning days. In 3 months you make $30. So it was really challenging, I'll tell you. But then I was able to get some extra, if I should convert it in dollars, I would say some extra $50 here and there from my role model, who I also did some work. My role model believed so much in me. And I think that's part of what gave me so much confidence, because he was a very respected senior lawyer. But when he gets his cases, he believed so much in me that he would give me his cases that he gets to review it for him and advise on the next steps.
Yeah.
So in-house, the senior lawyers believed in me, but the clients just rather went for the lawyers with the gray hair. Because they just couldn't trust a rookie with their cases.
Yeah. Interesting. So what I'm getting, I mean, you definitely seem like a very upbeat person. Like it almost seems like nothing has been able to shake your confidence. But I mean, as an entrepreneur, especially an entrepreneur over 7 years, I'm sure there must have been moments where you maybe second guessed the situation and it was a deep, tough time for you. So can you take us there to that moment so we understand what you were feeling then?
Yeah.
And maybe give us like a specific example.
Yes. I'll tell you, this actually is my lowest moment since I've been practicing that I'll share with you. I think it was in 2014, I had this client. The client was arrested and detained by the EFCC. The EFCC is our Economic and Financial Crimes Commission. She was detained, and her husband was suffering from cancer. But she had been managing her husband, and he was going on fine. But then she was detained by the EFCC, and the family called me and they said, please help us, you know, help us secure the release of our mother. She's the breadwinner of the family. She's one taking care of our dad, you know. So they trusted me so much with the case. And then I went to try and get her out, but I was unsuccessful. Now this was during my formative years. At the time, I just felt like, look, you must always win. You know, not winning wasn't even an option. And then I promised the family that no problem, I would secure, you know, her release and all of that. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to. And my failure to secure her release led to their mom going to prison. And she went to prison, and the husband died that very night. I was devastated. I was devastated. I just, because I had, it was never that real to me. Like the work I was doing up until then wasn't, the effect of the work I was doing up until that point was never real to me. So I just saw someone die because his wife was in prison, and I wasn't able to prevent her from going to prison in as much as I tried to prevent her from going to prison. So I was really devastated that period. I just wanted to shut down. I just told myself that, look, I'm no longer doing this anymore. You know, this probably is not meant for me. You know, if these are the effects of the work I do, you know, like, so I mean, someone is, it just was really devastating for me. I said that was it. I said I wasn't going to go back into legal practice. But well, you know how these things push we entrepreneurs. I just, at some point, I had to come back up. Say that these are some of the things. These are some of the consequences along the way. I wasn't responsible for the husband's death, but you know how it is when you be hard on yourself.
Yeah,
when you feel that you probably could have prevented this from happening. So yes, that was the lowest point ever.
Wow.
in my journey.
Wow. And so you mentioned a little bit about how you had to pull yourself up and press on. But
yeah.
So what was that process like? How long did it take? Take us to that moment when you decided that you were no longer going to be defined by that one failure and you had to continue to push forward.
Yes. I think I must have shut down for up to a month.
Wow.
You know, it was a mental shutdown. Just because I was devastated. I didn't know how to come back to defend someone else when I really didn't know what the consequences could be, you know, because this was unforeseen. I couldn't even calculate things to see that it, you know, the husband would pass at the time. So it was really devastating. But then I remember I listened to quite a lot of inspirational materials. So I listened to T.D. Jakes a lot, Bishop T.D. Jakes. And I think one of the things he was sharing at the time was, nothing just happens, you know, that when things happen, there's actually a reason why they happened. And there's a learning experience from whatever it is that happened, you know, that if it couldn't destroy you, then it should build you up. You know, I heard it over and over again that, you know, when things happen, you always want to make closure. So I said, okay, I think that's really what I'm after here, to make closure of this whole thing. So this whole thing would make sense. You know, I just want this to make sense to me. You know, if it's a learning experience, I want to know what I learned. Yeah. And I want to use that knowledge. I want to use that experience. Then I can fully tell myself that, okay, this had to happen for this to happen. You know, so I was seeking for it. But then I think I just accepted the fact that this is what experience really is. You know, this really is what experience is. You know, you would have to go through certain things for you would call yourself experience. So that was a tough learning experience for me. After a month, I bounced back.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You know, it's interesting what you say there is I tend to believe that a person gains a wealth of knowledge and information from areas where they fail because people, we don't naturally like to fail, but when we're walking, when we first learn to walk, if we fall, we make adjustments in our minds and we say, you know what, this didn't work. Let me adjust this way. But if you start off walking, the first time you fall, maybe it's a month, 2 months down the road, it'll actually be more devastating. So I've heard entrepreneurs say fail fast, fail early, and fail smart. And it seems like that's early, what you were doing. Key.
Oh yes. I failed early. I had lots of failures in my beginning days. And like my role model would tell me, he would say that you're never tested with big things. You're always tested with small things. You know, so you learn from those small things. And when the bigger things come up, you're able to learn fast from them. You know, and over the years, I've had several cases with the same agency, that jailed that particular client. And I've known how to block those instances. So that was the first and the last time I've ever had them jail any of my clients because I learned a whole lot from that experience.
All right. Well, and so, as a knowledge bands, we don't want to just focus on the downtimes. In fact, it's sort of the opposite. We want people to be inspired. So can you share with us a point in time that you were sort of just on cloud nine, everything seemed to be clicking, and you knew that being an entrepreneur was the right decision?
Yeah, well, I've actually had quite a number of those times. You just, I'll have one and then another one just comes up and then another one comes up. One of such times was when someone referred me to the federal government to be one of their lawyers. I was on cloud nine because that was a client that I had worked with. I'd worked with during my formative years, during my early days. I did some work for him and he actually fired his lawyers and then got me on board when I did some. His lawyers traveled and they called me to do some work for him. So he fired his lawyers and then got me on board full time because in his words, I did a far better job than those guys. And this same guy came back about 3 years later and referred me to the federal government. And, you know, I didn't even know he did this, but he submitted the name of my law firm and said that these people will be able to handle some cases for you. And then the federal government appointed me as one of its lawyers. I was like, wow, this is huge. I mean, you never have a bigger client than the federal government in any country. If you're advising the federal government, that tells a lot about, that speaks volumes, you know, about your capacity. So that was one of such times. Another was whenever I'm invited to give a speech, it just tells me that you want to hear me talk. And that's another, you know, attestation to the fact that I must be doing something right. You know, so it places me on cloud nine also. Last year I was invited to give a TEDx talk.
Wow.
So yeah.
Wow.
So I am a TEDx speaker, and you know, it's because I probably have been doing quite a number of things right. And people are watching that, you know, people, that's one thing I found out. People watch you, people watch your successes, people watch your down, people watch how fast it is for you to rise back up. So people watch you, people have been watching, they watch me a lot, and they keep giving me invitations for speaking engagements. Or I was also given an invitation to speak on your podcast. So my being here alone is even some form of, it speaks to the fact that people are watching and people think that I've been doing things that in their opinion are right. So yeah, this is today. This is one of my updates.
Nice.
This podcast is also one of my updates. Nice.
Well, it's an update for us too.
Wow. I guess it is.
Yeah.
I guess it is.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, I mean, you've given such a wealth of information. One of the things I want to draw out is I've heard a few people say this, but when you get to a certain point and you look back, you realize people are always taking note of what you're doing. So I want to drive that home to the people that are listening, is whatever you're doing. I mean, for me, it's, for my faith, it says, whatever you do, do it to the glory of God. And that's something I try to instill in my life. But whatever your religious affiliation is, when you work, people are always taking notice. So do the best that you can, and other things are come as a result of that. Just to draw out, there's a person I interviewed. His name is Lau Alu. He was a lawyer in Nigeria, but moved to New York and wanted to pursue art. And he said he was painting for free for so long, and he didn't really know whether anything was going to take off as a result of that. But he said almost at the time where he was deciding that he was going to leave and go back and continue practicing law, something happened, and Nike said, we'd been watching you for about 2.5 years or 3 years, and we saw that the work you're doing would really fit well with one of our huge events. And that's what put him on the map for notoriety. So it's always to say, you never know. There are a lot of people who are observing the work you're doing. So use it as an opportunity to showcase your talents.
Yeah. Very, very true. Yeah. Very, very true. It's something that has happened over and over again in my life. I've had people refer me to clients and tell me it's because I love what you do. And I noticed that they can't even mention one thing. So it really wasn't about one thing. It's really about an accumulation of everything they've seen me do. You know, it's just, and I try to stay thirsty, you know, so nothing is ever enough for me. You know, I take so much joy and satisfaction in the work I do, but the moment that one is done, my mind just goes to the next thing. So what's the next thing? What's the next thing that can be done? Yeah. You know, because I think Barack Obama would say that the arc of history is long, but it's on us to make sure that we bend that arc to the paths of justice, to the paths of truth, to the paths of rightness. So for me, I see my work as waking up every day, doing what I can do to bend that arc of history in the direction that I want it to go, especially in my country, especially in my continent, Africa. You know, so I there's always something to be done. And then I find myself always doing one thing after the other, after the other. Recently, I did a campaign to take children beggars from off the streets. And it was a very small campaign, but the campaign just went so far that the Lagos state governor heard. And they got little children begging on the street, off the street. You know, so the campaign yielded results. But it just started with me typing things on my Instagram profile, and then people copied it, and people shared, and people reposted, and people reposted. And the governor listened and did what he did. You know, one would finish that and, you know, relax and say, oh, yes, I've done something people haven't done in 10 years. But immediately after that, you know, you find yourself waking up and thinking, okay, so what's the next thing? Thank God we've gotten children beggars from off the streets. So what's the next thing that can be done? You know?
Yeah.
So I just try to stay thirsty. And by staying thirsty, people watch. And by people watching, people bring more opportunities to you.
Yeah.
Like they say, the reward for good work is more work.
That's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, right before we enter the rapid fire, I'm just curious. So it seems like you're a highly focused person. So how do you manage taking on a lot of work, completing that work with a high level of quality, and sort of sustaining that energy to continue to push on? Because these are strategies, I think, or these are habits and characteristics that breed successful entrepreneurs. And I see a lot of people who are able to naturally do it. But if you can break it down for people, how can they sort of develop those skills for themselves?
Yes, I think first of all, every day comes in 24 hours. You know, so it really has to do with time management. And I never like to think of work time and play time. I just would rather merge everything into one. I'd rather just say, go and live your life. And by living your life, you mix everything. You know, when you're working, enjoy yourself. Enjoy your work. When you enjoy your work, it wouldn't be work to you anymore. You know, when that passion is there, it's no longer like work anymore. This morning, I've already drafted a legal opinion. I have advised a company. And then I'm having this interview before 1 o'clock. And the day doesn't end here. From here, I'm going to the state criminal investigation department to conclude on something. So, you know, once you enjoy it, so it's really all about staying thirsty. Once you're thirsty, you can drink up whatever it is. So it's really about staying thirsty, enjoying what you do. If you don't enjoy what you do, think of more creative ways to do what you do. Don't be stereotypical. You know, just rejig things. You know, think of ways that you can do what you do. You know, when you think of creative ways to do random, to do normal things, it creates a spark. And when you have that spark, your productivity level is really, really sharp. So something that could take someone else 5 hours, take you 5 minutes. It literally could. You know, so it's really about staying fresh, and the only way you can stay fresh is by being creative, being passionate, and remaining thirsty. When you do that, the level at which you churn out work will be really fast. I churn out work really, really fast. In a day, I could advise a minimum of 5 companies.
Wow.
In just one day. They throw you problems. And then when they throw you problems, you know, the typical mind of a lawyer would be to start scanning through the law books. But then, what I would come through mentally would be, how can I solve this problem for this person? So I start thinking of creative ways by which I could solve the problem. And I'm brooding over it. I'm not thinking with a pen and a paper. I'm probably playing a game of tennis, but I'm thinking about how to solve this problem and how to, you know, and then I get the eureka moment and I'm like, hey, just give me a second. And I sit down with my phone and I just type out, you know, everything. And for me, I've gotten a solution to this person's problem. And I'm so excited, you know, so it could make me leave whatever it is I'm doing to start drafting a legal opinion or a response or something. So it's really about being passionate, staying fresh and creative. Mm.
Well, I think those are really some great pieces of advice for people. You started off by saying time management is crucial, but then merging your passion with your work makes it easier. And I see you're sort of mission driven, and your mission is to solve problems. You look at a problem and you say, how can we solve that? And I think it's a great skill to have, but it's also a great tool for everyone to sort of implement in their daily lifestyle is, what are the problems around you? We all have a responsibility as individuals who are living to make the world a better place. I do believe that. So it's look at the situations around you and how you can improve them. Nice. And with that, we'll move into the rapid fire. Are you ready?
Okay. Let's go.
All right. So, I mean, this might not really be that applicable because you started so early, but what might have been stopping you from taking the step to become an entrepreneur?
Fear. Hmm. Fear of not having enough money in your pocket.
Hmm. It's a big one.
Yeah.
And when did you stop looking at your business as a project and more as an actual business?
To be very honest with you, that was last year. Hmm. Just last year.
What happened to change that?
I think it had to do with the books I was reading at the time before now, and then of course because I was building a name for myself, I was building a reputation and all of that. So I kept on taking up cases, kept on doing things that was really all about solving problems without really thinking so much about the monetary aspect. Of course, I had money to keep me going, but from last year, we started to look at our books, we started to strategize, we started to implement strategies, we said to do internal restructuring to gear us towards profitability. We started setting targets. So yeah, the defining moment was last year for me.
Wow. Yeah. And as an entrepreneur, what would you say your superpower is?
My mind. I've been told that I have a mind of a computer, but yeah, my mind.
Okay.
My mind, I brood over issues. Hmm. I can brood over something for just 5 minutes and give you a solution you probably have never thought of all your life. So yeah, I think it's my mind.
And what quality do you wish to improve upon in yourself?
My speaking. I've always worked on it. I have my TEDx talk, but yeah, I think I'd like to, you know, improve on that. Look at the way you sound. You sound so smooth and so, you know, so yeah, I think I'd like to improve my to be at par with you.
Well, this is definitely going to be heavily edited, so that's giving me a lot of points in my favor.
Yeah.
And what's the best advice you've ever received, or one of the pieces of great advice you've received, and who is it from?
The best piece of advice I have received was from one of my first role model. Yes, he was my first role model, Uncle Uzo. He told me there is a stage you get to in your life that this was when I was quite young. I think I was 15 years old at the time, and he told me, I walked up to him to ask for a piece of advice, and he told me, look, there's a stage you get to in your life where you need to make your decisions and you need to stand to face the consequences of your decisions. And I was like, whoa. And then he told me this is one of such times. I had to make the decision. I was asking him for advice at the time. Actually, that decision was whether I should study law or accounting. Mm. And then he told me I'll have to make some decisions and I'll have to face the consequence of those decisions. So whenever I want to make a decision, I always remember that, look, you're going to make this decision and you're going to stand to face the consequences of this decision. Mm. So I think that that's about the best advice I've ever received.
Yeah. And what is an internet resource or an app that you couldn't live without?
I don't think there's anything I can't live without except oxygen.
Mm.
But something I find extremely resourceful, I would say it is Instagram.
Hmm.
I find Instagram extremely resourceful because Instagram is what Instagram is to the young people is what a website was to the older guys.
Hmm.
These young guys don't care about going to anybody's website. They could visit your website. They could, you know. But then you need to impress them. You need to show them something.
Yeah.
But Instagram is just an instant tool. It just goes out there. Whatever you're doing, you can sell it out there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think for me, it's Instagram. Mm.
And what is something that you're reading now?
I'm currently reading Social Networking for Rookies.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. Really, to close out this rapid fire session, do you feel like you've made it yet?
Nah. Nah. And I doubt I would ever come to that point where I'll feel like I've made it. Because just after one level of success, the thirst comes back again. So, you know, I just never see myself as having made it, quote unquote, you know, because for me, I ask questions. What is making it? Is making it when you find yourself on the cover of Forbes magazine? Or is it when you're on CNN?
Mm.
Or is it when you have enough money? But really, what's enough money? Is enough money when you buy a Rolls Royce? Or is it when you buy a jet? So, you know, I think these standards are quite transient.
Mm.
I rather just work on my own internal compass.
Mm.
And my internal compass tells me I haven't made it yet.
All right.
So,
fair enough. Yeah. Well, you can take a deep breath now. The rapid fire session is over and we're moving on into the cool down session. So, one thing I like to ask the bandits, we're definitely readers on the Knowledge Bandits, network. So, what is a book that you would recommend for us?
The Strategist. That's the best book every entrepreneur should read. I don't know. Did I mention that's the best book for every entrepreneur to read? Like, the book is something else. It would transform, it would change things in your business. It would do something to you. The Strategist by Cynthia Montgomery.
Mm.
She's a Harvard professor. She takes this class that Harvard organizes for CEOs.
Hmm.
So she's amazing. She's amazing. Or rather, the book is amazing. It's a read I would recommend for every entrepreneur.
Nice. Well, and so again, for the people listening, that's The Strategist by Cynthia Montgomery. And you'll be able to find that on Kema's page on the Knowledge Bandits website. All right. Okay. And so you mentioned having a few role models, a few mentors in your life, but can you share the importance of especially an entrepreneur, finding a mentor?
Okay. Well, I use the word mentor quite loosely because I've not really had a mentor in the sense that most people, you know, refer to the mentor. A mentor being the person that you can walk up to, tell what you're up to, gives you advice here and there. I've never really had any of such. So I've really been a dog that has carried his own leash.
Mm.
I've really worked a lot on self-governance.
Mm.
But what I've done is that I have had lots of role models.
Mm.
I've had lots of people that I would love to pattern my life after, you know, and I've tried to, you know, I just learn from their mistakes, learn from the things they would say. I listen to them a lot. I learn from the things they say and the things they wouldn't say, learn from the things they do. So I try, I just take a lot from those people. You know, I take a lot from Richard Branson. Mm. I take a lot from the Dalai Lama. Mm. I take a lot from Fela Anipula Kofi.
Mm.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, yeah.
But I take a lot from him. Yeah, I take a lot from, you know, from even from creative music videos. I just see the way people are creative. I take a lot from Kanye West.
Mm.
because of his creativity.
Yeah.
For Richard Branson, I think the fact that he's non-conformist, he doesn't think he needs to dress like CEO because he is a CEO. You know, he doesn't believe in having formal meetings. Mm. He can just have a discussion with you, and that's already an important meeting for him. So I just take these little things from people that inspire me, and if I have an opportunity, I'll just have conversations with these people so I can understand the way they think.
Yeah.
Without necessarily having to tell them, okay, this is what I'm doing, what do you think, what do you advise,
mm-hmm.
I want you to put me through. So I've never really had anyone in my life with whom I've had that relationship.
Yeah.
But I've had so many people that I learned a whole lot from.
And I think it's important to understand the way you process information. So for you, it's observing what people have done. So you seem like a very observant person by nature. And I think that...
Oh, yeah.
Works well for you. But there has to be something in the general area that you're looking at and using to improve upon yourself, because you can't accomplish anything alone. Whether it's by looking at something someone else has done to inspire you, you need to be sure that you're receiving a lot of this information and processing the information around you. And I think, there's really no better person to ask this question than you, a lawyer. So what would you prescribe for people who are trying to start businesses in Nigeria, whether they're from Nigeria or they're coming from outside of Nigeria?
Oh, well, I actually have a book I'm writing to be published this year. Yeah. The name of the book is The JJC's Guide to Doing Business in Nigeria. Yeah. JJC in Nigeria means a rookie's guide to doing business in Nigeria. So, in the book, I really dwelt on a whole lot. But for free, I would tell you that you need 10 things to be successful in doing business in Nigeria. Number one, get yourself a very good lawyer. And he will handle the remaining 9. So, yeah.
Nice.
I'll say that. Especially if you're not in Nigeria. Because look, Nigeria is quite a very different and unique country. I must warn you. So whenever you come in here, you always need that local know-how. Mm. And it's not something I can just explain to you. It's just a very different thing. I mean, it doesn't surprise you how Nigeria keeps coming up on international scene, sometimes for good, sometimes for bad, but it always comes up. Nigeria is not a country you can ignore in the international scene, you know, and it tells you that there's a whole lot going on in that country.
Yeah.
And you really need to understand that country. Mm. Like you really, really need to understand the country, and it's really not something you can break down under 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But you definitely need a trusted guide whenever you're in Nigeria. You definitely need that. And by needing that, just get yourself a good lawyer and he'll handle everything you need.
Get yourself a good lawyer named Kema.
Oh, yeah. Oh, named Kema in particular. Let's qualify it well.
Nice. Yes. Well, this has been really fun. As we're about to leave, what is one parting piece of advice you would give to us? Especially for those who are trying to start a business and who maybe don't have that motivation to start, or they're scared, something is standing in their way. What is one piece of advice you give us?
One piece of advice I would give anyone trying to start. Forget about motivation. Just do it.
Mm.
That's it. Forget about motivation. Just do it. I believe a lot in the just do it message, because your experiences will come if you just do it. Mm. Your money will come if you just do it. Mm. Whatever you really want will come only if you just do it. So while you're analyzing and strategizing and testing the waters and doing your feasibility studies and telling yourself that you don't have enough money, just do it. Scale down whatever it is you want to do to the smallest bit. Mm. You know, so even if you want to build the world's biggest factory, scale it down to the smallest bit. Mm. What kind of factory do you want to build? Do you want to build a factory that produces the best quality shoes in the world? Why not start by floating a website, float a podcast station, and your station give advice on how to shop for quality shoes. Mm. You know, give advice on how to identify good shoes when you find them.
Yeah.
You know, just get involved in the industry already, in the smallest bit possible. Start a website. We can show you the closest, or an app. We can link you to the closest cobbler or the closest place to buy good shoes. Mm. Give you advice on good shoes. But you really want to start a factory, but you just don't have that money to start that factory. So rather than wait till you get the money and then in the process of waiting your dream dies, just start something in the shoe business. Just start something. Start giving advice. Yeah. Start, open a cobbler shop, polish shoes for free, and then, you know, just start something. Just do it. Just start. Scale it to the lowest form possible and start. Just do it.
Nice. I really like that advice. Forget the motivation, just do it. And you'll find along the way, as an entrepreneur, the motivation sort of leaves momentarily a few times, and you need to just continue doing it. So I like that advice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Kemal, it's been amazing talking with you today. I mean, I personally have learned a lot, and I'm sure the bandits have gotten a lot off of this as well. So as you leave us, how can people connect with you, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, email, whatever?
Okay, I'm really active. I'm most active on my Instagram page. Mm. And that the handle for that is @KemaSmith01. That is @KemaSmith01. I'm also on Twitter. That's the same handle, but I'm more active on Instagram than I am on Twitter. I talk on Instagram.
Okay.
I put pictures. It's not just about the pictures. I talk on Instagram.
Okay.
So if you reach me there, my email address is there. So just if you go there, you can just click on the link and send me an email as well.
Great.
But I respond to messages there. So
nice.
Hit me up on Instagram.
And for people listening, we'll have that on the website also. So just go to Kemal's page and you'll find that. Well, Kemal, this has been an amazing experience again. I want to thank you on behalf of myself and the Knowledge Bandits. Stay inspired.
Hey, if you're still there, thanks for listening. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Handle is Knowledge Bandits everywhere. We have closed sessions lined up with some of the entrepreneurs that we've already interviewed. So if you have questions that weren't answered during the show, you'll have a chance to connect with them during these closed sessions. Just go to the Knowledge Bandits website at knowledgebandits.com and sign up for the newsletter on the contact page. If you or someone you know has a business, we'd love to share your story with the Knowledge Bandits community. Just send an email to interview@knowledgebandits.com. If you have a question for me or you want to connect with any of the guests so far, send an email to me personally at arum@knowledgebandits.com. Finally, if you love music and you have a few moments, please listen to Chive Rajao by Seu Jorge.
Oh, yo, yo, yeah. Oh, yo, yo.
razão. Posso falar? Não foi legal, não pegou bem. Que vontade de chorar, dói em pensar que ela não vem só agora. Mas pra mim tá tranquilo, eu vou zoar. O clima é de partida, vou dar sequência na vida. De bobeira que eu estou, e você sabe qual é que é. Eu vou, mas poderei voltar quando você quiser. E demorou, vai ser melhor. Tive razão, posso falar. Não foi legal, não pegou bem. Que vontade de chorar, dói em pensar que lá não vem só dor. Mas pra mim tá tranquilo, eu vou zoar. Clima de partida, vou dar sequência na minha vida. De bobeira que eu não estou, e você sabe como é. Eu vou, mas poderei voltar quando você quiser. Ah, 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 ah. E demorou, vai ser melhor. Apreciasse o belíssimo som de Paulinho Ribeiro, do Flugelhorn. Por favor, Paulinho. Senhoras e senhores, gostaria também que vocês considerassem o belíssimo som de Sidão Santos ao contrabaixo, From Real Lingo. Thank you.
pouquinho o pretinho da serrinha. Queria ouvir a voz de vocês. Muito simples, ó. Assim. Tive razão. Hey! Aí é massa, hein? Aí é maneiro. Aí tudo tem tudo a ver, isso aí.
Falei, Beto. Oh, alô, Vitor, meus amigos. Nossa, cara. Cadê o Bico? O Bico tá aí também? O Bico falhou, né? Falhou. Passatinho, né? Oh, cheio de amigos. Lotaria. Dedé, Talminha, ó. Oh.
Bobeira que eu estou. Eu vou, mas poderei voltar quando você quiser. Muito obrigado! Valeu!